Blog Talk Radio.
Hey people, welcome to WSSL's Fan View. This is Hazel. I'm standing in for AJ tonight, who is still in the hospital. We send him all our love and best wishes. And there's no need for anybody to call in because tonight we're going old school. Why not have the oldest member of WSSL go old school? Why not? I'm old. I can handle it. So I'm going to play a song and we're going to come right back.
One champion sound, yeah, Estelle, we about to get down. Who the hottest in the world right now? Just touched down in London town. Bet they give me a pound. Tell them put the money in my hand right now. Got a promoter, we need more seats. We just sold out all the floor seats.
Take me on a trip, I'd like to go someday. Take me to New York, I'd love to see LA. Take me to New York, I'd love to see LA.
Look at this peacoat, tell me he's broke. Woo! And I know you ain't into all that. I heard your lyrics, I feel your spirit. But I still talk that cash, cause a lot of wags wanna hear it. And I'm feeling like Mike at his baddest. Like the picture they gladdest. And I know they love it, so the hell with all that rubbish.
Would you be my love?
Could you be mine?
Would you be mine?
We are back. Excuse me if I keep coughing. I have a tickle in my throat that just really doesn't want to go. So, obviously, many of you who know me through WSSL know that originally I'm from England. And WWE in wrestling, well, it was WWF back then, obviously, and wrestling and everything, didn't really make a big impact in England until, I want to say, the mid-'80s. it started on TV on, if I remember rightly, it was a Thursday night that we used to watch it. You could only watch it if you had cable as well. And, you know, it was a big change from the wrestling that we're used to in England. In England, our wrestling shows were still pretty awesome, but there was always, it was the best of three pinfalls. So, you know, when WWE came to England and we started seeing the shows and everything, it was such a big deal. It was such a big thing for us in England because it was some of the things we had never seen before. You know, there were certain moves that you hadn't seen before and the flamboyance of it. So it was really kind of crazy when it started. And I want to say that every 80s baby, well, every 70s baby, sorry, because I got to go back in time here. Every 70s baby, at one point or another in England, was obsessed with wrestling. I'll even say this. My parents, who now will say they don't like wrestling, my dad was the one who had me watching wrestling with him. It used to be the one night of the week that I was allowed to stay up late, which was terrible for when I went to school, but I used to be able to stay up late and watch, you know, wrestling when it came on. And for me, it was totally mesmerizing. I was already obsessed with wanting to move to the USA. That was one of my dreams. When I remember when I was in school, we had a day where, you know, the kids did the presentation for their parents, and you had to say what you wanted to be when you grew up and where you wanted to live. And my response was, everybody, all the little girls, well, I want to be a princess, I want to be a ballet dancer, and I want to be living in a big house and all this lot. Now, this fool right here went on this particular day, told everybody that she wanted to be a vampire and live in the USA. So WWE, you know, really kind of pushed that more for me because I became so, so completely obsessed with, you know, the whole wrestling theme and everything. It didn't help matters that I have an older brother. His name was Matthew, and he was 10 years older than me, who started training in England when certain schools opened up to learn how to do what they called American wrestling. And my brother would go there, and he would drag me along on the days that I was supposed to be at visitation with my dad, well, my birth father, sorry, my birth father would never show up. So I'm being sidetracked here by an English Spider-Man. Anywho, that's where we're going. I would get... Did you take photos of it before you started coloring? Well, God dang it. I should take a picture on your phone. Anywho. So I would go with my brother to his training. So at this time, I was like 12, 13 years old. My brother was like my hero and everything, and I would see him get in that ring and see him train. And for me, it was the most amazing thing in the world. And I got to the age of 13, and he said to me one day, he said, Hazel, you coming in the ring with me tonight? And I'm like, no, I'm not. I forgot that I didn't argue with my brother. He was a scary, scary dude. You don't argue with scary big brothers. And yep. Anywho, my brother, you know, came, picked me up from school, and I went with him to training. And it was amazing to be able to get in a ring, you know, with my brother and to know about what he was learning and to for him to teach me and everything. And so there was that point where I wanted to be a wrestler as well. I got told, oh, you foolish girls can't be wrestlers because we didn't have Glow or anything show in England. So I didn't see these amazing female wrestlers that were starting to come out. And as I said, in England, when wrestling first came on, it was also heavily edited. We did not get the full shows. So we didn't see a lot of the stuff that, you know, girls nowadays would see. So, you know, I remember my brother going into the wrestling ring and just becoming this amazing, amazing wrestler. And as I say, he would take me along. I was able to, you know, go with him and be a part of that life for a while. And it was actually funny, a few years back, we were at an ICW show, and I think I'm sat on my phone because I feel it vibrating on my butt cheek. Yes, I am. We were at an ICW wrestling show, and we found a DVD when Ring of Honor went to England, and one of the matches in it was my brother. Sadly, I had to sell that DVD recently, but that was, you know, all I had after my brother passed away to show his career and everything. And it was an amazing career. But now if I go back to where I was saying, my dad, my stepdad that is, and myself, when we used to watch wrestling, we weren't the ones who rooted for Hulk Hogan. We weren't the ones who wanted, you know, the regular guys that you would think to win. Me and my dad were Bushwhackers fans. Right from the beginning, it was the Bushwhackers. Don't you sit there and shake your head. So I have a friend here who's like sitting there shaking his head at me with this look of, my God, these damn English people are fucking insane. That's what you're thinking, aren't you? Okay, so why shouldn't I have been a fan of the Bushwhackers?
They did it in WWE for their whole damn career.
Made me laugh.
If you wanted to laugh, you could have watched Doink.
No, because I am terrified of clowns, so that's not going to work for me at all. So come on, from old school wrestling, what were some of the best wrestlers that you remember?
What, just start a list now?
Yeah, keep going. We got an hour.
Well, let's see.
But you got to give reasons why.
Of course, Hogan was the front runner. He was the one that made the rock and roll era start in WWE.
That's
the
true.
Vince McMahon in WrestleMania. Ultimate Warrior. Beautiful characters that come to life. All the fans, because that's like what little kids were into with comic books, and he was like the comic book character come to life. Legion of Doom was another prime example because they were already established in Mid-South Championship Wrestling as the Road Warriors. Let's see, who else do we have here? The American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, who was also established from Mid-South Championship Wrestling, the son of a plumber. Let's see, who else do we got? Oh, Macho King Randy Savage. You can't describe wrestling without saying
stop.
Macho Man
because
Randy Savage.
He is wrestling, let's be honest. Everything about him, name somebody who hasn't tried to speak like him.
Very true.
Name somebody
very true.
Who hasn't tried to dress like him at some point.
Oh, I'm missing a very important person also.
Nick Roberts.
I'm missing another legend. I should have brought him up as soon as I mentioned Hogan. Andre the Giant.
Yes.
Yeah. The wonder of the world. I forgot to mention him. He should be on that list. Let's see who one of the greatest villains that ever stepped into a ring. $1 million Man Ted DiBiase.
Yeah.
You can't get more conceited than what he was. Besides Macho Man, he was so conceited that not only could he not win a title that he was desperately trying to get? He made his own title. How much more can he get?
But on the other side of that, though, as much as how conceited he was and arrogant and everything, there was just something so smooth about him.
I think that's what, hey, they made the right decision.
Yeah.
And then if you want to go a little bit, I say around about, this is not 80s I'm talking about. Now, if you want to go into the 90s, You may disagree with me, but I have to bring this up because it was a character like nobody had ever seen. And I'm talking about Mark Calloway, The Undertaker.
Oh, no, see, and that's the thing. The Undertaker's persona is one of the few. If
nobody
disagree with me or not.
Right, like
but
that.
His persona is one of the few that has managed to transcend all these different wrestling generations.
True.
And still draw everybody in.
True.
You've got 50 and 60-year-old men going on about The Undertaker along with 5 and 6-year-olds.
I forgot to mention another great Nature Boy Ric Flair.
Oh, my God, yes.
Babe Ruth of wrestling. If Hogan is the Michael Jordan or the Babe Ruth of wrestling, then Ric Flair is like the Nolan Ryan of wrestling. He's right up there with Hogan. If not bigger. If you want to think about it, Ric Flair started wrestling way before Hogan came into the industry, and he was already well established
right.
being a world champion. And he was like another conceited guy. He was like the million-dollar man of the 80s. You wanted to punch him in the face for being so damn
yeah.
good. But he was so smooth with it that you were like, you know, can't even touch it.
Now tell me you haven't done the Ric Flair woo.
Who hasn't? Everybody is emulating that. Still to this day, whenever you get a good chop in a match, the crowd goes right with it.
Yep. And see, and that tells you the size of a really good wrestler. If other wrestlers are doing a move that, say, for example, as you say, like the chop, everybody associates that with Ric Flair and woo. Now, if you as a wrestler can have that happen years later,
you've left
yeah.
the park. There's not left to account, but Shawn Michaels is another one. But that's when he became a breakout star.
Yep.
But he was with the Rockers, you know, that was like his foot in the door. He did him and Marty Jannetty did their thing, but when he broke out at the Heartbreak Kid, then it was like nobody could touch him.
Yep.
And I will have to mention Jake the Snake Roberts because of the fact is, still to this day, in every corporation, every fed you've ever watched, ever been, any fed that's ever been out there, they are still using a move to this day that he invented, the DDT.
Yep.
There is not a wrestler that has not used that move, and he invented the move.
Right. And see, the other thing as well, which I think is missing from certain, like, wrestling, like, now, is the 80s and 90s had some of the best feuds.
You ain't lying.
Let's be honest with you.
But
if you go back to like the 80s and everything, when we were in the middle of the Cold War between the East and West, you had the Iron Sheik and Hulk Hogan and all that lot.
I could name at least about 4 good feuds alone, and that's within a year I could name about 4 good ones. In the 90s alone, I could name about 4 good feuds.
Go for it.
Number one. Big Boss Man versus the Mountain. Who was the real law enforcement of
yep.
the World Wrestling Federation?
Yep.
And how did Big Cole make that match? SummerSlam, jailhouse match. Loser spends the night in jail. That's one of them already. That I just threw out there. I'm leaving my top one for the last one, but I'm letting think of another good one. Trying to throw out a good one there. Try to make a good one. Well, I'm gonna throw out my top pick for the very first one, for this one, because I can't think of one right now. And this man was right on the money with this. There is no way that they can ever duplicate this one again. Hulk Hogan versus the Ultimate Warrior.
Oh my God! Yes.
There is no way they can ever reduplicate.
No.
I don't care if Ultimate Warrior was still alive right now. There's no way to duplicate that.
No.
The build up to the match was great. The match itself suffered a little bit, but it was a good match. But the dynamic behind it is your two biggest baby faces. Both of them are champions. Put them together in a match, and only one has to win. Whoever wins walks out with both titles. No disqualification, no countouts. someone has to win. And the crowd is now drawn 50-50. Like, should we cheer for Hogan?
Right.
Should we cheer for Warrior?
Sure, big time, because every part of you wants to cheer for both of them.
Right.
And you're sort of like, well, you know when you get into the, when you've got like two wrestlers together and they're like hitting each other and you've got the, yay, boo, yay. But with that match,
when
you cry, you're like, yay,
you.
Yay. Yay! It's like, how do you decide to, I mean, it was impossible.
Another good one I could remember, it, I think it could have gone longer, but it was still a good build-up to make the, to push the characters in the right direction. We're just watching it last night. Undertaker vs. Kamala casket match, the very, the
yeah.
very first casket match. It was a good idea because, from my standpoint, it was a good way to push both characters.
Right.
Undertaker was still relatively new, but then here you have a guy that's been around for a while trying to put his, you know, putting his dominance down on the guy that's, on the new guy that's coming in is like just running rough out. Because Undertaker didn't lose for a complete year when he first came in. Even when he got his title match against Hogan at the Gravest Challenge Dub Survivor Series, he still didn't lose. He was a whole year undefeated, a rookie. The only other person that could even, the only other person that could probably equal that is Brock Lesnar. He's the only other person that could equal run a run shot for a rookie year, never losing, and then become a champion. But that casket match was a good idea. That was a good feud, Kamala Undertaker.
Okay, but here's the other thing. I don't know if you agree or not, and I've mentioned it to people before, and I get looked at like I'm totally insane. But so you can look at me like I'm insane. I'm used to it. Don't you agree as well, apart from the fact that they, the 80s and certain parts of the 90s produced the best feuds, the feuds made sense, and they ran a good course. It wasn't like a two-week thing, hit a pay-per-view, and it was done.
Oh, no, they, when they did feuds back in the day, they ran for at least about 3-4 months or more. They would start at, like, a pay-per-view or, like, a TV taping, and then would run to the next pay-per-view. And back then, as you know,
we only had
like
four
pay-per-views.
Yeah.
It was, if you want to go in, if you want to go in order, the beginning of the year was Royal Rumble. Then March or April would be WrestleMania.
Yeah.
August was SummerSlam. Thanksgiving Eve was Survivor Series, and then it'd be Royal Rumble again. So they had a whole lot of, instead of having now, like, it's a pay-per-view every dang month or every other weekend, they actually had time to plan and build up to that pay-per-view, which made the pay-per-view, which made you want to watch the pay-per-view.
Absolutely. And the feuds then, when you got to the point where they were in the ring, as you know, everybody remembers how Hulk Hogan used to stand in that ring and start doing the shake when he was getting into that mode. Yeah, you would see him shake. And that was one, I don't know if you agree, it was one of the most exciting moments. You know,
shit
was going to hit the fan any second.
You know about that? The only good feud, another good feud, my God, I don't like how they did the outcome of it. The outcome of the feud, it suffered. It suffered dramatically because of how it ended. SummerSlam 1991. Correct me if I'm wrong, I believe it was 90. Hogan versus Earthquake. Now, the storyline goes that Hogan was on the Brother Love show. He was cutting the interview. Earthquake comes out. He does his finisher move to him, called the Earthquake, which he also invented. He did it to him like 3 times, crushed his ribs. Hogan was out for like, and everybody thought Hogan's career was over with. So they make the big build up for like Hogan returning at SummerSlam. So when the match took place, for it to end via disqualification, that to me, that messed it all up for me. Like, dude, we waited all this, we waited from what? From like right after WrestleMania all the way up to SummerSlam to see them finally face each other and an end via DQ.
Yeah.
That didn't prove anything.
No, but I mean, let's be honest, back then, as I said, the feud made sense and lasted. The feuds nowadays are literally 3 weeks long because that's approximately the time between each.
And they have to go on for fucking ever.
And the other thing as well, and to me, is there was a lot more prestige in the title because they didn't change hands every 5 minutes. You've got some people who have been wrestling for WWE right now who have been wrestling for 2 years and have held like certain titles 4 times already. It didn't happen like that.
The belts nowadays don't make no damn sense. They ain't even no point in even having them anymore because all they do is keep putting them on the same people over and over again.
Yeah.
They ain't giving nobody no kind of push. I can understand where, like, you put the world title on, like, your box office draw. I can understand that. But then to give nobody else a, like, the hell, how many titles of WWE have now? Let's see here. We got the Universal title, we got the WWE title, we got 2 sets of tag team titles, the Intercontinental title, the U.S. title, and I guess you could throw the Cruiserweight title in there, and the Divas title.
2 women's championships, one for Raw and one for SmackDown.
But it's the same people that have the titles every single time. Like, man, like give somebody else a chance. Back then, like, for instance, Intercontinental title was, as everybody has said, whoever, back in the day, who's ever held it, always said it was the workhorse title.
Yep.
Why? Because that was, like, the matches that everybody wanted to see. Prime example, Mr. Perfect versus Bret Hart. That was a great match. SummerSlam. Great match. Awesome Warrior Ratchet and Drew. That was an awesome match for SummerSlam 89, I believe. That match was awesome. Rick Rude made it possible. But now it's like you get an Intercontinental title match going, nobody cares.
Well, and the thing is, when it comes to the title matches, let's be honest, when the titles were held before and there was that prestige in them, I'm not saying that the wrestlers now don't work for them, but there seemed to be so much more effort put into it. So much more heartbreak when somebody didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you thought they deserved it. It hurt when somebody didn't get that title.
Or when someone had it and lost it and you for that person.
Yeah. And, you know, as you said, the titles now, they switch hands so damn quick. Every 5 minutes, this person's got it, this person's got it, this person's got it. And you sit there, and I'll tell you this, it's part of the reason I stopped watching wrestling a lot. Yes, AJ watches it. He is such a huge wrestling fan of all wrestling. He likes the old stuff. He likes the new stuff. So to him, it's not such a big deal. He understands why people, you know, why they want to fall this way or why they... But to me, it's like when I watch it, I remember how it was, as I say, when I was growing up, and having that excitement that in a couple of months we've got a pay-per-view. Not in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. And pay-per-views were a hell of a lot cheaper back then.
Well, yeah. But
since we've been talking about WWE, let's switch gears to WCW in the early 90s.
Okay, see, this is where you're going to have to educate me, because WCW didn't come to England.
Oh, back in the 90s, they were just to talk to WWE.
Let me explain. WCW didn't come to England
I got to give my fair share to WCW because they did some stuff.
You could do that. They didn't come to England for a very long time. And when we did get it, it was every other month. So, for me, WCW is kind of, you know, you always have that one thing that's kind of there and you saw it and you wanted to watch it, but you never quite got it. That's how it was for me. So, you can teach me on WCW.
Well, let's start with some of the heavy hitters in WCW, shall we? We will start off with who everybody knows. If you're a wrestling fan and you don't know this click, just stop watching wrestling. Four Horsemen.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody knows Four Horsemen. They were the heavy hitters, and they had heavy hitters in the team. The original four, for those of you that do not know about this, the original Four Horsemen were Arn Anderson, Ric Flair, Tony Blanchard, and Oldie Anderson. Those were the original four. Lex Luger eventually joined them. Sting joined them. You had the Road Warriors. They were there for a good period of time before they went over to WWE. But this one WCW was still known as NWA. This before Ted Turner bought the territory. Let's see who else we had over there. We had Barry Windham. He was in NWA. He was the champion for a little while. Magnum T.I., he was another heavy hitter. But I'm going to go ahead and go to early 90s WCW when Sting was the top draw. And there was not a person alive in WCW that Sting did not face. If you were a villain, Sting went against you at least one time.
Okay.
Because, heck, you had Ric Flair, you had Big Van Vader, you had, let's see, who else? You had Cactus Jack, what he was known as Cactus Jack. Of course, everybody knows him now as Mick Foley, but
right.
Yeah, they had some, and they had some great castings back then. Fabulous Freebirds. Let's see, who else do we have up in there? The Steiner Brothers. They had Nasty Boys for a little while, but the feuds were just as good, and the pay-per-views were just as good as WWE. I'll admit to that. My favorite too would probably have to be Great American Bash, because that's where Sting did a lot of ass whooping at. And my other feud, and I don't see why WWE has not brought this back. Halloween Havoc, spin the wheel, make the deal.
See, I remember that.
Why not bring that pay-per-view back? Forget if it's in the, I know it's the PG era, but bring it back. John Cena ain't running that no more. Bring it back. When was the last time John Cena did anything? I'll take that back. What was the only time John Cena did anything significant? He ain't really did nothing.
I'll come back, Sean. I'm going to think.
You come back, break your ankle, and a Royal Rumble, come back, get a title shot, and he had a damn thing for it. And they try to figure out why he was able to beat Ric Flair's record.
Right.
Ric Flair, when he became 16-time world champion, he actually worked to become the title contender. Not break his leg and come back like, hey, I want a title shot. Or go off and make a movie and they lie about it and then he comes back, hey, I get a title shot.
Yeah.
He lied about John Cena being injured when he was gone making the Marine. Comes back, hey, I get a title shot. I ain't getting nothing for it, but I'm going to get a title shot. And win the title at that. I ain't did a damn thing in over 6 months, but I'm going to become world champion again. I ain't getting nothing for it.
Yeah. See, and that's where I have issues as well, is the as we were saying about the titles, they're just, like, handed to people.
At least you had to work for it.
Yep.
You started from the bottom, you worked your way up until you became a decent draw where people were actually buying tickets to come see you. You work a little bit higher, you start off with the Intercontinental title. If they see that you can carry that belt well, you will eventually drop in and become a world champion.
Okay, so let's be honest. The reason I know you is because I met you through wrestling. If you call on
you. Sure.
Yeah. So, say for example, you're still in tip-top wrestling shape and have been. No, I just said we'll pretend, okay? If you could face anyone from the 80s or the 90s, who would your dream match be against?
Dead Man Walking.
So the Undertaker.
Damn Skippy. I'll let him do, well, hell, I would have had to let him beat me up. I'd get beat up by him with a smile on my face.
But this is probably actually part of a conversation we had last night in regards to it.
I get beat up with a smile on my face. I wouldn't care. I'd be in the ring getting choke slams thrown around every time the camera was on me. I'd leave the match a loser and I'd be booing like heck. I'd still.
You idiot. Okay, so on that note, while my friend's deciding to be a complete and utter fool, which, if you know him, it's still a very hard thing for him to try and do. Comes natural.
Very.
Yeah. I'm going to play a song and we'll be back. Okay, everybody, and we are back. Okay, so during this brief intermission that we had, there was a few that was brought up that were failed to be mentioned.
I'm sorry.
Do you know what? You need to hang your head in shame.
I can't think of it at the time.
And this feud actually was one that they could bring back today. It will still run.
Not as good. PG-era.
Yeah.
Back then it was PG-14, so they got away with a lot of stuff.
And that feud was between
Steve Austin and Vince McMahon.
See, my friend's voice, he just got squeezed his nuts and his voice went high, so.
I was busy doing, I can't say pharmaceutical because it's legal. But yeah, the Austin McMahon feud.
What do you think, what was the reason that feud was so amazing?
Well, I can tell you that right now because Austin was like the blue collar guy. He was the guy for the working class. And who among us has never gone to work and wanted to beat the shit out of our bosses with no repercussion?
Yeah, good point.
Everybody has done that.
Wait, I work for myself. That means I want to beat myself.
And being that Austin actually did it, that's what he said, that he was for the working class. Like,
he came everyone's hero.
Within just that one, hell, I was beating Bret Hart that she became a hero. Actually, what made him become a hero was how he left WrestleMania 13. The commission match with him and Bret Hart. Bret Hart went in as the baby face. Now, it's an I Quit match. The only way to lose is saying I quit. Austin did not quit. He was in a puddle of his own blood and still did not say I quit. And then not only that, passed out and left the ring on his own power rod. He's not helping.
And I don't know if you remember seeing it, like, when WWE and the TV networks had the issue in regards to blood in matches. They changed it from where you could literally, as you said, be laid in the middle of the ring in a pool of your own blood, and it was cool.
But that was also when it was live.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, he would, like, of course, WrestleMania live, you can't edit that out. You can try.
It's all in me. We're going to have a momentary break to hear us sing.
You're
really loud. Well, no, baby. I'm doing that truly. Whoa. Whoa. We're watching I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, so.
There you go.
It's this bit. Here he goes.
That's great.
Anywho, okay.
Back to the blood content in wrestling. You know, now they stop the match in between and wipe up the blood. Wouldn't like that. There's only one incident. WCW used to do this a lot, though. They used to piss the blood out a lot in the early 90s. Especially if it was televised, if they had the option of being able to do that. WWE did it on a few occasions. They only used blood in the early 90s to really heighten, like, the hype around it.
Right. And the thing is what happened over, like, in recent years, and they're getting better now at it. They had a spate of time where if a wrestler started bleeding, they stopped the match, and they went to commercial right away. And I can't remember who he was wrestling against, but there was a match with Batista, and he got cut after being hit with a chair. And you could see the way the chair hit him that he was going to get hurt from it. Because it was just really off. It was at a weird angle, you know? And he ended up with a little cut on his forehead into his hairline, and it started bleeding. Well, they went to commercial right away. When they came back, you could see him still tending to Batista. And where WWE made the mistake was is that they had somebody with a microphone nearby. And they weren't able to edit it out in time. You heard Batista say, "For fuck's sake, I'm a wrestler. Let me get back in the ring and stop this pussy bullshit." So you can tell then just by that comment that the wrestlers were pissed off. Because I imagine as a wrestler, you know, if you're stopped during the flow of a match because you have a small cut, trying then to pick up from where you left off, you lose it.
He did the same thing with Undertaker and Brock Lesnar. Fuck the Hell in a Cell match. All the hell.
Yeah.
They were killing each other, and then match was getting good, and then they stopped the match, so they can let the blood off both of them.
Yeah.
That interrupted the match completely because then the tone was completely down from where they were at originally.
Right.
And Brock Lesnar, he'd be taking them blood shots. Man, the SummerSlam, I remember this one very clear. SummerSlam, him and Undertaker were beating each other again.
Right.
This is like the second time they went against the Luke Brown and WrestleMania. They went against each other again. Undertaker threw Brock Lesnar into the steel post. He hit it dead on. As soon as he hit it, just
right.
I was like, man, he took it like a trooper. I was like, that was no big blood. That was a hit.
And that's the thing is that, you know, I understand why WWE was pressured into stopping the whole blood thing. A lot of it had to do with changing it to PG, and some of it
messed it up at all.
And they said some of it also had to do with the whole AIDS thing and not wanting to cross-contaminate blood and being cautious of that. Let's be perfectly honest.
You can't
expect matches to flow and run how they're supposed to. If every time someone gets a boo-boo, you stop. Yeah, I've seen a couple. I saw one match, and I cannot remember the two freaking wrestlers who were in it. One of the wrestlers jumped out the ring onto the other one, landed awkwardly, and you saw his leg break.
Oh, man, I've seen some wrestling injuries.
Right. God. Now, for something serious like that, or say, for example, if I've been wrestling and what I did to my elbow happened, please stop the match, by all means, you know. But
those of you that want to watch wrestling injuries, go on YouTube and type in wrestling injuries. You will see some stuff on there that will make your skin crawl. My brother, who is a wrestler, can't even watch that stuff.
And see, and this is the thing to me is that some of the injuries that you actually see and everything now on there, yeah, they're serious, but they're nothing like you saw back in the 80s and the 90s. Because, I don't know, you probably
remember. That happened in the early 2000s, but damn.
But you also remember this as well. Is that they WWE started banning certain wrestling moves because of injuries.
Yeah. They tried to take out the pedigree. They couldn't do it. They tried to eliminate Undertaker's tombstone power driver. They couldn't do it. One move I know they took out was the 450 splash. They ended up banning that because too many people were getting injured off of it. What was another one? I can't remember.
I know
there was a few of them they tried to, but they didn't get rid of them.
I know that they were under pressure to get rid of, oh my God, what's his face's super kick?
No, Michael.
Yeah.
They tried to take away the gym.
Yeah, they tried to get rid of that because too many kids were copying it in school and actually making impact. Well, do you know what? What can you do? Because let's be perfectly honest, every child who has watched wrestling has copied the moves. I cannot tell you how many times my asshole brothers have kicked me, tried suplexing me. I mean, the list goes on. I went home from visiting with my brother with a black eye and was sworn to secrecy because my brother, who's 2 years older than me, jumped off the top of the off bed with an elbow, and I didn't move in time. You know, I mean, we've all done it. We've all been there, despite the warnings of WWE wrestlers are trained professionals. Please do not try this at home. Get the hell out of here. You've got kids. You're still going to do it.
If you're letting your kids watch wrestling, you're asking them to do it. You're pretty much inviting them to do it.
My son is now a big Stone Cold fan, but at the time he was into like all the different wrestlers. My son, at age 9 years old, and I have to explain how my bed used to look. I had this big, heavy oak wooden bed, and it had two pillars at the end of it and two pillars at the headboard end. And the pillars were flat on the top. I woke up one morning on my son's birthday when he, and I always left a bag of little toys for him to play with for his birthday present at the end of his bed. So if he woke up early, there was gifts there already for him. My mistake was putting wrestling figures in that bag this one particular year. My son came into my room, climbed up on my bed, climbed up on top of the pillar, and went to me, "Mommy, look, I get woken up to him doing a flying kick off the top of the bed. My son made impact with my forehead. My head then smacked into the headboard. Oh, I laid there for 20 minutes, dazed, didn't know my own name, where I was, and where I was going.
Wow.
And when I asked him, when I finally got my senses, and said, "Why did you do that?" He went, "Because it's fun, Mum, and you should have seen your face." Yeah, the look of shit horror as this 10-year-old is coming towards me, you know. But, I mean, going back to what we were saying, I understand certain moves being banned because of repeated injuries by trained professionals, but they need to stop.
So our son has even done a lecture on his tiger.
That was the funniest shit ever. I was there witnessing the whole damn thing. I was up there watching it. My son, 3 years old. I made the mistake of watching a Hulk Hogan DVD that I own. I made the mistake of watching this. Upon watching this, I was sitting on the bed watching Hogan leg drop opponent after opponent and winning. Not knowing that right in the back of me, on the bed, my son has his favorite stuffed animal, a tiger, laying on the bed, jumping up and down on him with a leg drop at 3 years old.
See, and that's the thing, is that, you know, kids are going to copy regardless. But as I say, I understand if trained professionals are repeatedly getting injured from certain moves. By all means, decide to stop that move. But there are certain things that you can't, and the other thing is, they renamed certain moves because John Cena's one.
Yeah, it was known as the SU, they became the attitude adjustment.
Yeah.
Which actually, the attitude adjustment, for those of you who are 80s and 90s, for those of you that don't have that kind of knowledge, the attitude adjustment was actually a power driver at one point in time.
Right, but my whole thing is that Cena wanted it, he didn't want it named the SU because that's too close to custom.
But he'll stick with that SU-SDF.
Yeah. And my whole thing is, and what I dislike about it is that as much as I understand why Cena is good for the brand in the sense that he does bring in, you know, a lot of people and a lot of kids and everything, he tried making it so, not even PG rated. He made it more like Disney rated. Don't you think?
Yeah. Because I can understand his fan base is mostly kids, but, yeah, that just messed it up for the people that grew up watching it. Oh, yeah, I made the mistake of peaching him that. That was my current mistake. We're in the kitchen one day. I mentioned Million Dollar Man a while ago. I made the mistake of teaching my son how to laugh like that. the cutest thing ever.
But I mean, my whole thing in regards to, you know, there's so many changes and stuff is that I understand you've got to keep up with the times and all this stuff, but you really have also got to realize that there's a reason why people are so obsessed and so set on WCW and the Attitude Era and earlier things because they work. They worked, they were entertainment, they made you rooted for the... Just be honest, there were some people who were so damn good at being bad that you wanted to cheer for them while you're booing. You know, you really do.
People have actually made that successful adjustment into being baby, then healed, then back to baby again.
Right.
There's only very few people that have actually done it. Shawn Michaels has done a good job at it. Triple H is damn sure did a good job at it. Undertaker was another one. Jake the Snake Roberts is a good one. Macho Man, damn sure. Ric Flair was another one.
And that's the thing, is that, you know, when you want to cheer for the most hated wrestling guy, then you've succeeded. And the problem is, to me right now, is that there isn't that going on. There isn't enough of that. And that is why, to me, like, the old school is going to always, people are always going to come back to it and cheer for it and, you know, want to be that and want to have that back. So, okay, as we're down to the final 4 minutes, tell me this. Which two wrestlers didn't wrestle together that you'd really want to see?
Being your Taker.
Why?
Because there was a dream match set for WrestleMania that never took place. Just being retired too damn early. Darkness versus Darkness. Two of the biggest people, two of the biggest babies at the time, just like they did with Hogan and Warrior. Two of the biggest babies, especially since everybody wanted to see Sting in WWE anyway. He finally made his, and he finally signed the contract to be with WWE. Everybody was waiting for Sting to take up the Clash, and it never happened.
Okay, so on that note, we are going to end this show. We're going to play out with a song. I would like to thank my special guest, the artist formerly known as Mike. He's now just known as Fuzzy Fluffy. If you could see his hair right now, you'd understand why. I want to thank him for helping me do this show while AJ is in hospital. And we shall be back later next week. Bye.
I got a condo in Manhattan. Baby girl, what's happening? You and your ass invited. So go on and get to clapping. Go pop a phone, pan, pop it for me. Turn around and drop it for a pan. Drop it for me. I rent a beach house in Miami. Wake up with no jammies. Lobster tail for dinner. Coolio served that scampi. You got it if you want it. Got it if you want it. Said you got it if you want it. Take my wallet if you want it now. Jump in the Cadillac.
Girl, let's put some miles on it.
Anything you want.
Just to put a smile on it.
You deserve it, baby. You deserve it all. And I'm gonna give it to you.
Cool jewelry shining so bright. Strawberry champagne all night. Lucky for you, that's what I like. That's what I like. Lucky for you, that's what I like. That's what I like. Next by the fire.
For you, that's what I like. That's what I like.